The world of ministry to teenagers can offer a full range of emotion, interesting challenges, rewarding victories, and discouraging difficulty. It is important to remember that the work we do with students is vital. It is good to be reminded that what you do matters and is appreciated. We hope that the time you spend here will encourage you and equip you to hit the mark in life and ministry. Welcome to the SCOPOST Podcast, impacting youth ministry in Oklahoma and beyond.
Hello and welcome to the SCOPOST Podcast. This is Todd Sanders, and I'm in studio with
Rusty McMullen.
Rusty, thanks so much for being here with us today, giving a little bit of your valuable time here in an afternoon at camp, actually. We're at camp this week, and you're preaching. It's Friday afternoon. So how are you feeling?
Oh, I'm feeling great. The Spirit of the Lord's been in place, giving us strength, right?
Yes. Throat holding up, voice holding up.
Yeah, doing
good,
well,
man.
Doing well. God's healed.
We've seen some really great things happen. I'm sure you have a ton of stories just with conversations you've been in, and it's always great to be at Falls Creek, and it's certainly good to have you here with us this week.
Thank you.
And I know it is busy, and so I do thank you
for
the time you've given. So
glad to be here.
Rusty, for our listeners, many of our listeners know you from youth ministry days and just being involved with you through different ministry endeavors through the convention work. But just tell our listeners a little bit about where you are now, where you've come from in ministry, and a little bit about your family. Just give us a little snapshot there.
So in 2010, I transitioned from Quail Springs Baptist Church and youth ministry towards pastorate, and I went to Maude, Oklahoma. Spent about 3 years there in my first pastorate, full-time senior pastor position. And then about five ago, the Lord transitioned me to Sayre, Oklahoma, and I've been there for a little while, and God's been doing tremendous work. We've seen a good hand of God on our church and seen a lot of people saved and baptized, a lot of disciples made, men's ministry's really grown. And so that's where I've currently been, and then I'm also in transition now. We just received a call on June 3rd to go to First Baptist Church in McAllister, and so technically as of this week, I am their pastor at First Baptist Church McAllister. My first Sunday there will be June 22nd, so I still have a couple weeks here in transition, and that's been a blessing. God's just been working all that out, provided my wife a job and the house sold and all those things, so he's been working that out. That's been great. So I do have my wife. Its name is Lindsay. We've been married 14 years, and we have three little boys, 8-year-old Beau, and then our twins are 6 years old, Dax and Hudson, so it's a little bit about us.
Very good. So a lot of transition and flex there. And I want to get to that in just a minute. But I want to just pick your brain for a minute on this current move. I mean, moving into this, what are you excited about? What are you looking forward to in this new post that the Lord has you in?
So Sayre's been a wonderful place for us to serve. And we've just seen God do some tremendous things with people trusting the Lord, and the church is really healthy and it's at a good place. But God has been positioning us to make this move. I was youth pastor at First Baptist McAllister years ago, 2003 to 2007, before I went to Quail, and first youth ministry job right out of the box. And so that was pretty surreal to know that the Lord was calling us back full circle into that pastoral position. Finished my doctorate just a couple of years ago, and that kind of primed the pump for them to even consider me. And so that's been an important part of the piece to this puzzle. And First McAllister is a historical church. It's a legacy church in our state, and it's a church that needs to be strong, not only for the kingdom, but for Southeast Oklahoma and for our convention. And so I'm looking forward to getting into this legacy church and really leading well and casting some vision and helping them to get focused on the Great Commission, sharing the gospel
so
with
good.
People.
Yeah, that's great. So now, are you from McAllister?
No, I'm not from McAllister. Okay. I grew up in Greenville, Texas.
Okay, you grew up in Texas and then served in McAllister.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Very good. So what is there a little hesitation or any nervousness there about coming in a different role than you were as a youth person? Or do you think there's enough time passed there? Just how are you feeling about that?
Yeah, I think there's been plenty of time that's passed, for one. I think that the growth of myself, just in maturity and development as a leader, development as a preacher, development in being able to care for people and love on people has significantly grown. But Lindsay and I, honestly, have always felt just through this process that it was like coming home. And so the people we've loved McAllister ever since we left, and we thought maybe there might be a day where the Lord would bring us back around, and we had no clue when or how, but God's opened that door. And so it's been pretty surreal. I mean, sitting there in that sanctuary for the first time at the View of a Call Sunday after having not been there for 11 years and just remembering all the things that God did before and thinking about all the things he wants to do in the future. It's just overwhelming and it's humbling to know that God is calling us back there.
Yeah, that's great. So now, do you have a lot of your former students who are now parents and adults in the church?
Yeah, that was really cool to walk in and see all their kids playing with our kids. You know, it's like, you're not old enough to have kids, you know, or maybe I'm that old now. So, yeah that is going to be cool. There are quite a few of those students that are still there in the church. Yeah. And obviously, some of them have moved on. But, we're excited about rekindling those relationships as well.
Yeah, what a great way to continue to invest in those lives just in that different role. That'll be great to see. And we're excited to see what the Lord will do through that. So let's kind of spend a moment and just talk about the transitions. I know that, you've had a couple of church moves and now into a whole different role and then taking on just different levels of responsibility at the churches you've been at. Moving from Maud, which is a smaller church, to a little larger church. And now, like you said, one of these legacy churches that is, just by design in the area, they tend to be larger attendance churches. So in all of that transition, like what was the beginning thing that would stir the Lord's moving in you to become a pastor?
Okay. So whenever I graduated out of OBU and I went to First Baptist McAllister right out of college, I never sensed in my heart that the Lord would do the work of calling me to a pastor. I wasn't interested in that. I watched what pastors did and the amount of leadership that they had to have, sometimes the difficulties that they had to face in leading the church, and it just wasn't something that I thought I would ever be interested in doing. Of course, at that time I was 20 through 24 at First McAllister. And so really it was the calling from First McAllister to Quail Springs into the junior high position at Quail Springs where the Lord really began to direct my heart. Coming to Quail, with it being a little larger of a church in the city area where there were multiple schools, I really had to start developing my relationships with adults more than students. And so with my Sunday school teachers, my Wednesday night workers, my Sunday night helpers, all the people that played such instrumental roles in loving on students, because there were so many, I just couldn't practically do the work of the ministry with every single kid like I could at McAllister, where there may be one or two schools and that's it. And so as I worked with adults, that's where the Lord really began to move my heart towards pastoral ministry. And not only that, but the teaching that the Lord was giving me, the opportunity to do the teaching and preaching. And so those things grew in my heart. And as those things grew, of course, Hans Dilbeck was my pastor at Quail Springs, and he was instrumental in the leadership of my heart towards those things. And he and I talked often about the possibility. And one of the things he said to me that was so vital in my life, he said, "Rusty, you should pray that the Lord will release you from youth ministry before you even consider becoming a pastor." And so I started to pray for that. I said, "Lord, if this is what you want," as I was beginning to sense that in my spirit, "Lord, if this is what you want, I really need a release. I need to know that you are calling me away from youth ministry," which is something I never thought that I would ever pray. And in fact, whenever I told Lindsay, she said, "You really want to be a pastor?" She couldn't believe that I would even be considering that. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I started praying about it, I never will forget the day. The Lord did give me a release. I was in the service there at Quail Springs, and I didn't have any role in the service. I just came to the front in case anyone needed to make a decision. And Hans was standing just a few feet from me, and the sermon hadn't addressed it. There was nothing in that service that would point me towards this, but Spirit washed over me, and I directly sensed the Lord saying, "I'm giving you the release. It's time for you to consider pastoring." And whenever he did that, I started crying there at the front, which is typical of me. And Hans was standing
Welcome
there.
Welcome to the club, my friend. Welcome to the club.
Hans was standing there, and he looked over at me, and he knew immediately what the Lord had done. And so he came over, put his arm around me. He said, "I think you just got your answer, didn't you?" And I said, "Yeah, I did." And so we slowly started putting out resumes. And as we did, of course, you were instrumental in helping me find Maud. I didn't even know where Maud, Oklahoma was. And God used you to position me into that place.
Yeah, really cool to be a part of that process. I was doing the interim stuff there and working with their committee. And it was really cool to see then what the Lord did with that as well. Yeah. And the continued, impact that your ministry there has in people's lives.
So we went to Maud and we were there for 3 years. And just kind of some of the transitions that happened over the last couple of churches. So Maud was a very small town, still is a very small town. The church there, Trinity Baptist Church, we saw the good hand of the Lord work there. Over the course of just a 3-year time period, we saw, I think it was 80 around 80 people trust the Lord and be baptized just in a couple of years there. The church was growing and healthy. And really what the Lord ingrained in me at Maud was to learn the value of every position in the church, because I was the only staff until we hired a youth pastor to come alongside me, a part-time youth pastor, Josh Franzoni, who came and hung out with us for about a year and a half of that 3 years. And so I was helping with the custodial work. I was helping changing the letters on the signs. I was changing light bulbs. I was doing the worship. I was helping with youth ministry, children's ministry. I just learned the value of leadership in the church. And really one of the things the Lord taught me there is the value of helping lay people to discover their calling in the church and to utilize their giftings to accomplish the work of the ministry. And so that was the primary learning curve. And not only that, giving me the opportunity to preach on a weekly basis and even up to four times a week that I would get to preach. And so developing there in that ability. It also gave me the opportunity to finish seminary, which I think is very important and instrumental. It is a lot of information that you gain during the master's level work, but it is useful information. It's information that has honed me in my preaching to be able to study a text and to rightly divide it. And honestly, if I hadn't finished my master's and my doctorate, like I said, First McAllister may not have even considered me. Yeah. And so that's just the day and time that some churches are in, and they still consider that to be important. So then we went to Sayre after 3 years, and God just worked all that out. It would take me a few minutes to express to you how that happened, but it was just amazing the way God established that. I went and preached a revival, and Lindsay's heart was open whenever I got home. She said, "We're going to move to that church, aren't we?" And that was actually a year before we actually moved to the church. And I said, "Well, that's funny, because their pastor just resigned and they're about to put together a search committee." And we didn't know how long that would take, but sure enough, that's what the Lord did. He opened that door and we went in view of a call. So I've been at Sayre now for just under 5 years. And one of the things that's been crucial for me in learning there is how to work with the staff, how to work alongside a youth pastor, a music minister, secretary, custodians, and all of those kinds of things, how to develop relationships there. And I think it's so important as a pastor to really build those relationships, not just to be the guy with the thumb down on them, to be the heavy-handed pastor who always says my way, or get out of the way, that kind of deal, or if you're not doing it my way, you're in trouble. No, I believe that those guys have a calling just like I do, and as much freedom as I can give them to fulfill that calling, as long as we're working together, unified as a staff for the church and one vision, then yeah, they should have freedom to be able to do what they need to do. And I don't need to be the guy hovering. I need to be the guy encouraging and coming alongside and helping. Yeah. So I'll come and I'll spend all week at Falls Creek, with the student pastor and just say, "What do you want me to do? I'll do anything. You want me to cook? You want me to sponsor? You want me to sweep the floors? You want me to lead a small group? You just tell me. You want me to lead the cabin devotion? Just whatever you need, I want to be here to help you." Same with our music pastor. We try to get together and discuss services. And so the development of staff, but not only that, the learning about the other parts of leadership in the church, so the committees and the deacons and all of those things and how they interact together. I've learned a lot about budgeting. I've learned a lot about administration, I guess, of a congregation. And so those are some of the things that God has used to teach me. And so it's like he's piecing together leading up to this First McAllister that is somewhat of a larger church. Right now they're running about 300 to 350, somewhere in there. And so in years past, it has been a much larger church. I believe that the day is coming where it will be again. God's going to do a tremendous work there. But I'm just looking at it and I'm saying, yeah, okay, so already I know that scheduling my time is going to be very important, establishing hours for study, establishing hours for staffing, establishing hours for administration, establishing hours for counseling or care ministry. And one of the things I'd say to any young guy out there listening, or pastor or youth pastor that's listening, I can't overemphasize the value of loving people. Hang out in the sanctuary before service and shake every hand that you can shake, and just, even if it's just for a brief second, saying hi, and go into their hospitals. I know that as you get into a larger church, you have to be real careful about how much of that time you give away, but being able, even just a phone call, to the shut-ins or the people who are out there who just want to know that their pastor cares. And I think that's invaluable. And so I would just encourage you to really get out there and love on your people any way that you can. Look for opportunities. Mm-hmm. And that will pay dividends for you to be able to see the good work of unity. That's the one thing that God stressed in my heart. You're to preserve the unity of the church, to build the unity of the church. And so I'm an adamant defender of the unity of the church. Mm-hmm. And part of that comes by loving people well.
Yeah. So good. There are so many things that you said there that we could easily take paths. And that's like with any of our podcast episodes, we could camp out on things for a whole hour. But we're not going to do that right now. But I heard some things in there. And maybe in the next segment as we come, we'll talk about some practical things. But I did see some threads. One, in all of those transitions, in those moments, there was an openness to the Lord's leading. Not only that, there was a listening to the Lord's leading. And then there was a response to the Lord's leading.
That's good.
And so, I mean, I just saw that as running through there. And then also, I think one thing that our listeners, it really encouraged me was every situation you've been in, you've used as a learning platform for whatever's next. Right. And so this idea of transitions to me comes, you know, plays into this idea that heard someone say years ago, the call of God is always dynamic. Always dynamic. And so that means that we as his followers are always responding to how he's leading in new directions and new ways. And as Blackaby would say, joining him in his work where he's already at work. And so I appreciate you showing that. And I also think it's key, like there's a legacy lesson here as well, because you were in a church, and I'm just being familiar with Quail Springs because it's my home church now. Just being familiar with that culture there is a culture of responding to the Lord's leading, developing leaders, growing people, helping them seek the Lord's leading, sending out missionaries from the church and church planters from the church and pastors from the church. And just always, that's just the mindset. And so I think it's so important that you develop that culture. And I know that that's your heart and you're geared that way as well. And so I appreciate a lot of just those encouragements and those little things. So if you were listening and taking notes, a lot of good stuff just in listening to your experience and where you've come from. So let's just take a break right here. We'll come back and we'll look at some of those practical things that maybe you drew from your moments of transition, and then maybe some practical things that could help those listeners out there that may be facing a time of transition in
Sounds
their lives.
Great.
All right. So we'll be right back for segment two of the Scopos podcast. Welcome back to segment two of the Scopos podcast. This is Todd Sanders, and I'm with
Rusty McMullen.
Rusty, we're talking about transitions and those things that you felt, experienced, responded to, you learned through all those transitions you've been through and that's brought you to where you are now. You're working on a transitions project with a couple other guys who were former youth pastors. Just tell us a little bit about what that project is and what you're hoping to do with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm working with Scott Watkins and Nick Ataya, and we are working on a book currently that will help a student pastor or possibly even any other positional staff position in a church to consider the step from that position towards pastorate. Primarily, it will be for youth pastors. And that's come about from us, all three of us guys, being ones who transitioned just recently from the youth pastor position towards the pastorate position. And we're hoping through our time in writing that we will be able to help youth pastors to get an idea about the preaching ministry of the pastor, the pastoral care leadership of a pastor, and then just general leadership, right? So how do you deal with administration and those kinds of things within the church? And so each one of us will take a segment there and write specifically from our understanding and our experience of how that transition took place and how to prepare yourself for those types of ministries.
So good. So what's kind of the time frame looking at when you guys are wanting to release this? I mean, it's in progress. You guys have started.
Yeah. So we're hoping within the next few months we've been talking to a few people that are really interested in the publication of the book. And mm-hmm. So we're hoping that we can set some deadlines for ourselves, maybe just right after summer gets finished here. Summer's just a crazy time for us as pastors and leaders in the church. We already have been meeting and working on this project over the last about 6 months. And so I've been working on my part. Nick's working on his. Scott's working on his. And so we're hoping sometime around this next fall semester that we'll be able to get this thing completed and then go through the editing. You know a little bit about that. You and your wife just went through it. So yeah. Some of the editing process there and really get that thing clarified down so we can get it in the hands of youth guys.
A never-ending process of revision.
That's right.
It's a beautiful thing. So, well, cool. So let's think about transitions. And as we think about that project, and certainly can't wait to get our hands on that and be able to benefit from it. I know it'll be a valuable tool for many who are right where you were, just experienced recently, or where you are coming from youth, we're coming from youth ministry into the pastorate. So in thinking about that, because I know there are plenty of people who are right now that are listening, that are joining us, that are feeling that pull. And for whatever the reason, it might be a circumstance, it might be a context issue, it might be a life stage issue, any number of reasons, but certainly the call of God stirring in them to, hey, be open to this moving. So let's just kind of look at some practical things in this segment that you've learned and that would help people that may be going through that and making those decisions right now, make that and move in and through that transition.
So a few things that come to mind almost immediately, the first is, of which is you need to be very clear that God is going to call you out of the position that you're currently in to become a pastor. That pastoral calling needs to be so very clearly impressed upon your heart before you take that step, because I had some stigmas about what the pastor does, and most of them were true. I found out, just the ideas of tough leadership and having to deal with difficulties and having to make decisions that sometimes were not always accepted, by the people in the church. And so the times that those things have come into my pastoral ministry, I've always had to fall back on the calling. God, I know that you called me to this. And so if you've called me to this, you're going to prepare the way, you're going to provide for it, and you're going to give me the strength through that calling to continue in that process. And so I think that you need to be very clear about that calling before you take that step. Now, I have a view that the calling to ministry really has been broken up into specific areas of calling to ministry, primarily by the church. Whenever we see calling in ministry in Scripture, we really see just one calling to ministry.
Right.
And so I believe that my youth pastor, my music minister, education, wherever position, missions even, wherever you fall, that calling is the same. And that calling is to preach the gospel and to give your life to preaching the gospel. But in that calling to division, of course, within our church, of whether you determine to be a youth pastor, a music minister, or whatever it may be, I think that you just need to hear very clearly that the pastoral ministry is where you're being called to. With that said, I also want to say that there are a lot of good youth guys that I know that are have been in youth ministry for some time, and I've watched them very closely, and they're dear friends of mine. And I would say that many of those guys are wired to be pastors, and I would just encourage them not to be fearful of the leadership of a church. One of the things that I've definitely learned is that building relationships always overarches when you have to make a big decision, right? It's what John Maxwell said, putting change in your pocket, right? And so if you're building the relationships and you're loving people well, and you're not coming in saying, well, we got to change everything about this in the first year, and you're the kind of guy who is patient with the people and even brings in the leadership on the decision to help move the church forward in change, helping them to buy in, helping them to understand what's happening, taking it very slow and being paced about it, and allowing them to have a voice in the conversation will always buy you change in your pocket for whenever that day comes that you need to make the hard decisions. And so just a couple of things there. Number one, be confident in the call. Number two, as you make that transition, love the people well. Go in immediately. And I would even say, you need to be, for me, I would wait almost 6 months to a year before I would even make any major change. Because as soon as you make a major change, yes, people talk about the honeymoon. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in a honeymoon stage. I believe that any pastor can make the wrong decision in the first 2 years and it could cause him grief and pain down the road. But I also believe that people do love you and give you grace on the front end. But you don't want to lose all that change right off the bat. You want to hang on to some of that for down the road whenever you have to make a harder decision. And so, so those are two big things in transition that I would really challenge you guys to consider, is the calling and then building the relationships almost immediately.
Yeah, on the relationship thing, I think that there is also, if we're really paying attention to what you're saying, is that loving on people is not going to change when you go into the pastorate. You need to be practicing that now.
Yeah, that's right.
And so if you're not willing to love the people right where you are, even if things are difficult, then what's to say you're going to do that as a pastor? Being a pastor is not going to fix that.
That's right.
You know, it's
that's
not going to make you of a sudden, right. Hey, I'm going to spend all the time loving on the people you tend just to slip into the same kind of patterns, just with more responsibility on the church thrust upon you. And right. that never is a good thing.
I would say one other thing. I think a lot of guys coming right out of seminary or even youth pastors, sometimes we have an ambition in our heart about where we think we should end up. And if I would have followed that in my own heart whenever I was transitioning out of Quail, it could have been very detrimental to my ministry. There are churches that I am not ready to lead. And I'm just being honest about that. I believe in the Lord's power, and I believe that he can raise up the Davids, you know, among the Goliaths. I don't doubt that. But I would just say, humble yourself and really consider whether or not God would take you to the least of these. You know, Maud was not a prestigious church to start with. And it's not, I'm not diminishing their value by saying that. It's not a Quail Springs is what I mean. And so in that transition, that was one of the things I really had to pray through in my own pride, right? I don't have to go to the Quail Springs of the world as my first church. And in a lot of ways, you need to learn. That's what God's taught me through these transitions, is I needed to learn some things vital at Maud. There were great things that God taught me there about how to love people and how to lead and how to respect the roles and understand what everyone does. And then at Sayre, there's been this learning curve also where I've had to deal with budget and budget cuts and trying to figure out how to lead a church and then even cast a new vision for them, right? And the wrestle with that between leadership and myself. And I believe that that's going to continue at McAllister, even being learnable, yeah. I guess is what I'd say there.
Yeah, definitely being open to whatever's next. But I think that position of humility is so important, especially in today's world as guys are coming through and they're, you know, in their 20s and moving through and many of them so capable and definitely you wouldn't argue with that. But sometimes we let our capability give us this overinflated sense of confidence.
That's right.
And then we have to realize that this is a slow burn. We have to put in our time. And that's not to say we don't deserve a shot at something bigger. It's just to say you learn those lessons in the difficulty and in the small places. So what does Scripture say? I don't think Jesus was off when he said he was faithful in a very little thing is also faithful in much. And
Jesus is never off.
Yeah, Jesus is never off. So I was saying that kind of sarcastic, you know, kind of tongue in cheek. But I mean, that's what he says, you know. And so I think that that's a great thing for our listeners to hear, especially young leaders, and even me as someone who's been in ministry for 25 plus years, and guys who are doing the work that have been in their place for, you know, 15, 20 years, and just continuing to be faithful in their work, is be responsible with what you've been given in that moment and not, you know, because you're capable, be overconfident and then think this is all about you and your ability. So I think those are important things to remember. Let me go back to that moment where you first responded. You were in the service at Quail. The Lord spoke to you. Maybe someone that's waiting for that moment for it to click. What was it? Are there any specifics you could give us about that moment or at least that period of time where you're like, these were the confirmations that I needed, where the Lord was saying, I release you from this work here. You're moving into the pastorate.
Yeah, so there were a few there. You know, obviously Hans had a big persuasion. And in my ministry career, I've always looked for men who are older and wiser than me that I could develop mentor relationships with. And Hans is, Dr. Dilbeck has been one of those guys. He's really loved me and cared for me. And he's had, I believe, in his walk with the Lord. And so for him to speak into my life and to point out characteristic traits in me that he believed could be used for kingdom purposes from the lead pastor position was vital, instrumental. My spouse, your wife has to be on board with you. I mean, if she's not. So whenever I first came to her and I said it, she said, that's crazy. But it didn't take long for her to to say, I agree with this. I think this is what God's doing in our lives. And then through those processes of interviews, I did interview with more than just Maud, actually just one other church. But through that process of the interviewing, God really transitioned her heart as well. And for the first time, she realized, oh, I'm going to be a pastor's wife, which she never thought when we got married, you know.
And right.
But the Lord did a work in her life to direct her towards that. And then also confirmation from other people that are around you in ministry. So not only just mentors, not only your spouse, but there were adults of students that were in the youth ministry, in the middle school ministry at Quail Springs, who I had built relationships with, and they were saying to me, you should really consider being a pastor. Your preaching ability, you know, the gifting God's given to you there, your ability to love people, your ability to lead and to cast a vision, those are all things that they were addressing with me in their own way. And so I'm hearing multiple voices. And you know, anytime that God's going to call you to something, he's going to make it so, I mean, that's instrumental. He's going to make it so crystal clear through all of the voices in your life aligning to give you that vision and that direction. And you're going to know, in my heart, I knew. That's why I cried on that front pew, because I knew I'd been hearing and gaining wisdom on that. And I'd been praying. And I guess the last thing I would say is be patient. It just because you're thinking that way doesn't mean you need to jump in it today. It may be. God may call you today. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast right now and you're sensing the Spirit in your heart, you may say, okay, this is it. But be patient and wait for that calling, because even if you think that's what God's going to call you to, if you get out of line or out of step with his timing, it's not going to end well. We want to be right in step. You know, the scripture tells us that we need the Lord to go before us and come behind us and hem us in on both sides. And we want to walk right where he wants us to walk and take the steps that he wants us to take in faith, but with a clear understanding about what he's doing.
That's good. So as those voices lined up, I think you gave a really good picture of the kind of the secret sauce of determine as the Lord speaks to you and it's confirmed in his word, or it's according to the truth. And then these other voices that come in. Also, great encouragement to any pastors listening out there as you're working with those people on your church staff or in your church. If you're the only staff member in that sense, you're definitely working with volunteers to carry off the ministry of the church. This idea that you seek to be that presence, godly presence of encouragement and guidance in the life of those people that you've been given responsibility with and over. And so I think that those are great reminders for us all, and great encouragements too. But definitely it's like a secret sauce there of like, you know, it's obviously like you have the calling and you have your wife and you have these voices and you have pastoral leadership and just so many things there. It's like a checklist. And I think if those things are out of bounds, then maybe there's more patience that's required.
That's right.
So that kind of fuels that whole process. Good stuff. Good stuff. As we talk about transitions, we're going to take a little break here, come back, and we're going to talk about one more project you're involved with that might be of interest to our listeners. So hang out for just a second. We'll be back for segment 3 of the Scopus podcast. Hello, and welcome back to segment 3. Of the Scopus podcast with in studio here with
Rusty McMullen.
And here's the last thing I want to talk about just briefly, just to kind of connect our listeners out there with maybe a resource or, you know, a community that might be helpful. There's a new project you guys are working on with a group of guys. Tell us about the Young Pastors Partnership.
It's called Oklahoma Young Pastors Partnership. And a few years ago, over a year ago, we started putting together a team of young pastors that could help develop a organization that would connect young guys from across our state. So when we say young, that was a big system of debate because no one wants to check the driver's license. So really what we came down to was guys 45 and under, or any guy who is brand new in the pastoral ministry. So some of you guys out there who are thinking about transitioning from youth ministry to pastorate, be a great place for you to connect. And where it came from actually is from our years of youth ministry, where we had great relationships across the state and built those through Super Summer and Falls Creek and Okima and all the different things that the convention has helped us to put together to build those relationships. And we just kind of looked and didn't see much of that happening for pastors. And so that's where that came from in our hearts. And we really want to just build relationships for a couple of purposes. One, just to have an outlet and avenue of accountability and friendship and encouragement, right? We want to be able to know guys who are in the same trenches we are, leading the churches and figuring out preaching schedules and figuring out how to love people well and figuring out how to lead well in our churches. And really don't want any guy to feel alone mm-hmm. in what they're doing in pastoral right. ministry, but then also to help strengthen our convention. So we want to be a part of one another to where years from now, our convention, the Southern Baptist Convention and the BGCO is still strong and healthy. And we have a lot of like-minded guys, or at least guys who have relationships that can talk about the situations that we're facing.
Yeah, no, I think it's great because we do enjoy a very strong brotherhood, sisterhood in our Oklahoma youth ministry ranks and have for years, since before I started, it started developing. And so we're talking 30 plus years of guys just having these relationships. What I think is great is that there's now that option for guys who may be coming out of that or to give those young pastors who are desiring that connection. Also, I think I've seen it stem into some of that interaction with even more established pastors, the desire that's there more. And I know you guys are working with Brett Selby, who's our pastoral leadership specialist at the convention. He's supportive of that and behind you guys in that. And even have some older pastors who are speaking into that process as well, or I guess more experienced pastors. I would put myself in that category too. I appreciate you guys letting me hang out and chat with you guys, even though I'm, you know, now beyond the higher end of the Young Pastors Partnership.
You're old.
I'm old. So just a great opportunity. And I just wanted our listeners to be aware of that. So if that relates to you, if that would fit you out there, Rusty, why don't you tell us how they can get in touch with you guys, website, Twitter, what's the...
The website is OKLAYPP, I believe, .com.
You down with OKLAYPP?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, you don't know me.
That's right. Yeah. And then we have a Facebook page.
You rebrand that.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, that's Nick Ataya's fault, by the way. We'll blame him. But yeah, we have a Facebook page and we have a Twitter handle and all those kinds of things. But really, the primary ways that you can get connected, we have two events coming up in the fall. One of those is in partnership with Frontline Church, and it's called Small Town Pastor, and they'll be meeting in Shawnee. That one requires a little bit of pay to get in, but man, I'm excited about that event that's coming up, and we're going to be working with them, and some of our guys will be speaking at that. Yeah. And then secondly, at the convention this year, we have J.D. Greer coming, and we're not positive it's going to be...
Yeah, exactly.
The new SBC president, right? So great young leader for our nation, and now as the president, we're excited to have him. We got him booked and we're excited. That'll be kind of in cooperation with the convention and with the pastor's conference. And part of our goal is not to go rogue from BGCO. I just want to say that right here as best I can. We're not trying to stand against the convention at all. We're not trying to build something that's against any other person in our state. We believe in the BGCO. We believe all of us who support the BGCO, all of our churches do that are at the leadership level, and we believe in that. And so Brett Selby is kind of on our board, more or less, kind of ex officio, just to help us think through some things and be a part of that. And so not to diminish any of the work that you guys are doing at the convention. We're just trying to add to it. So we'll host this event, and we're not sure if it'll be lunch or dinner yet. We'll have that information here coming up in the next couple of months as summer wraps up, and we'll be able to paint that out there, and we'd love for you guys. You'll see it plenty. It'll be advertised really mm-hmm. well. And so either one of those events, great way for you to be able to connect with what we're doing.
That's awesome. Rusty, thanks so much for your time.
Thank
you. So appreciate it. It's always great to hang out with you.
Great to hang out with you.
And I love spending time with you this week. And we need to do it more often.
Absolutely.
So a couple of things. People could look forward to the book that's coming up, the work in progress mm-hmm. on transitions, and also the Young Pastors Partnership. Okay.
OKLAYPP. Yeah,
that's those of you who didn't catch that. It's OKLA as in Oklahoma, Young Pastors Partnership.
You got it.
Gotcha.
That's right.
So we are at a close of our time together, and thank you guys for listening. Make sure you check out those resources as they come available. Look forward to the fall and this on the events with the Young Pastors Partnership coming up. Look for information there. And we'll look forward to seeing you guys the next time here on the Scopos Podcast, where we are helping you hit the mark in life and ministry. Thanks.
Scopos and the Scopos Podcast are ministries of the BGCO and made available through the generous gifts of Oklahoma Baptists to the Cooperative Program. Find out more about Oklahoma Youth Ministry at scopos.org.
Welcome
to the Scopos Podcast, where we're sure to finish within 5 hours.